Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
I'm sure you've heard the ads on the radio encouraging you to slow down to reduce your fuel consumption, but what's that all about? Can slower speeds really help reduce your fuel costs? Well, to help us understand the concept of eco-driving, I'm joined in the studio by the motoring journalist Michael Sheridan, and also Turlough Downs, who's professor in mathematical sciences and director of the Centre for Astrophysics and Relativity at DCU. We have the right brains in the studio this morning, I'll tell you that. Good morning to you both. Thanks for being with us. So if you are trying to be more energy efficient in the car, Michael, what do you need to focus on?
I suppose, essentially, you need to be aware of what you're doing. So you're pushing a ton and a half through the air. And if you had to push start your car, you'd be really aware of what makes it go and the energy needed to make it shift. So you really need to anticipate where you're going with your vehicle and then be as economical as you can with your right foot, which controls a tap of energy to the motor, whatever's driving the vehicle. So if you needlessly waste energy quickly getting up to speed and then jamming on the brakes when you're coming up to traffic lights and then accelerating hard again, you're needlessly wasting energy.
You're burning through your fuel.
Yeah, so if you anticipate the way the traffic is flowing and you go at that flow, you're then prepared for things. And again, we said before, traffic lights, they have one function in the world, and that is to change. So expect these things to kind of happen. And a bit of anticipation will help you be a smoother driver. And if you educate your right foot a little bit to be gentle with the accelerator, then you will save fuel.
It's not just that, though, is it? There are other things in your car and on your car that use fuel that we should be aware of, too.
Yeah. Now, again, if I can state the obvious, if you're carrying needless weight, this will add to it because you're then just making the car even heavier. So imagine picking up something and taking it up the stairs. You want to be as light as possible, you know, moving the car around the place. Tire pressures. Tires, we always say, oh, check your tire pressures. Nobody checks their tire pressures. People put the car in for a service. It might get tires checked then, but unless you've got a puncture or a warning light comes on, nobody checks them. Check your tire pressures.
How often?
Well, they say you should check them once a week, but even once a month, any check at all will help, because if the pressure is right, the tire is then running at the optimal performance level, and that means that it's creating the right amount of grip, so when you need to turn and stop you can, but also it isn't creating drag, because an underinflated tire will eat through fuel because it's gripping more to the road, and the motor making the car move has to work harder to push it along.
So it makes logical sense.
And then again, your car, depending on the car you have, most cars will tend to have a kind of a sweet spot where they're optimal in terms of how efficiently the engine or the motor is making the wheels turn. A lot of times it's sort of circa 80, 100 kilometres an hour. Once you go above 100 kilometres an hour, you're asking your car to do a hell of a lot because it has to push through the air. And that's like carrying your entire family on your back going up the stairs. And it's not a case of saying, well, it's only going to be a gradual increase. It's a massive increase. And
can you give us an example or a breakdown of how much you could save if you reduce your speed from 120 to, say, between 80 and 100, as you say?
Depending on a journey, if you're on a motorway journey doing 120, and, you know, if that's 120 kilometres an hour, so in an hour you'll travel 100. The difference between that and 100 kilometres an hour, you could save 25% on your fuel costs.
Now that's a
generalization, because again, people don't really know specific numbers and so on, and different models vary, but you can save a fortune. The trick is to respect other road users and make sure that if you're on an economy run or trying to eke out the last bit of fuel for your journey, that you're not imposing on other drivers, particularly professional drivers, truck drivers. They're on limiters, they're on time constraints, so they have to stick to their limiter, which is
so
no more than 100 kilometres. Well, stay
we're,
in your lane, but
we're not
be aware
good at that.
Of delaying trucks and other work vehicles that need to get to places on the motorway network.
Turlough, you're here for the science bit. So we have had it explained to us that we'll save fuel if we go slower. Will you explain why that is the case?
Sure, yeah. So Michael mentioned the sweet spot that a lot of these vehicles have, and for lots of cars it's around 80 to 90 kilometres an hour. And once you go above that speed, what happens is, at that speed, the amount of effort that your engine has to put into pushing the air out of the way of the car is about the same as it has to do in, as it has to put into overcoming the internal friction of the engine, things like that, and pushing the tyres along the road. So then once you go above that, really the main thing that's happening to your engine, the main reason your engine is working harder is because the air resistance is higher. And if you're a cyclist, you'll know well just what happens as you speed up. Like when you're you're just coasting along at a very slow rate, you can go along forever. But when you start pedaling to try and maintain a certain speed, the air resistance goes up massively. So, for example, in a car or on a bicycle, if you double your speed, you quadruple the effort that you need to put in. So it goes up by a factor of four, not just a factor of two. Mm-hmm. So the air resistance is really bad news. And this is why if you decide to drive along at 80 kilometres an hour, you'll use a certain amount of fuel. If you accelerate to 100 kilometres an hour and do the same length journey, you'll increase your fuel usage by about 30%. If instead of 80 kilometres an hour, you go at 120 kilometres an hour, then you go up by about 60% in terms of your fuel usage for the same length journey. Now, I don't know about anybody else or any of the listeners, but I can't drive on a motorway at 80 kilometres an hour. That is just like feels really slow. But you can actually use the professional drivers, the HGVs, because they have limiters for 90 kilometres an hour roughly. And you can easily just go at their speed. And then you know that you're driving at a really efficient rate. You're not delaying the professional drivers. You stay in the slow lane, obviously. But you'll save an enormous amount of money at those high speeds. The arguments change a little bit if you're going at low speed. So if you're in urban start-stop traffic, then you again, as Michael said, you need to go as slow as you can. So if the car ahead of you, you know, I don't know what they're doing, they're a bit distracted, the traffic moves off in front of them and then they accelerate off down 50 metres and then stop again. You should go as slow as you possibly can, because if you decide to travel that journey at 20 kilometres an hour, you'll use four times the amount of fuel that if you travel at 10 kilometres an hour for absolutely zero gain in terms of time, because you're still going to catch up with the car ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to go gentle. I mean, the overall thing is, apart from the speed, overall the idea is to be gentle on the accelerator and try to drive as if you're not going to use your brakes.
What about the brakes? Talk to me about the brakes, about using the brakes, overusing the brakes, because that has an impact too.
Well, so the brakes, I mean, obviously they're very important. You don't want to not use them under any circumstances. But at the same time, all they do is they convert that valuable energy that you've burned your fuel to put into your car moving down the road. They just convert that into heat. So if you do decide to travel to catch up with the car ahead of you and do it at 20 kilometres an hour, then you have to put on the brakes. All that fuel that you burned in order to get your car moving, that energy now goes into heating up your brakes.
Pointless.
Absolutely pointless. So Michael mentioned the word again, anticipation is the big thing. If you're driving along a motorway and you realise, there's, you know, one lorry overtaking another lorry, everybody's having to slow down, just take your foot off the accelerator. Don't try not to use your brake to slow you down. Just take your foot off the accelerator, because then immediately you're using much less fuel to get to coast that distance to where you'll catch up with the rest of the traffic.
With your foot off the accelerator, you're using no fuel, because you actually cut the fuel off completely, as opposed to parents in my day used to knock a car into neutral, but the engine would use fuel as it idled. So you use no fuel if you lift off. Mm-hmm. And then just with the brake, Turlock point on the brakes, you're wearing out parts that are going to cost you money at your next service.
Yeah.
And then while some new cars like hybrids and electric cars will have regenerative braking, where when you lift off, they reverse the motor and will try and get some charge back. It's still very little, but it's going that direction. But again, it's all that effort you went. It's like, you know, bringing a big load of washing up the stairs and then just say, actually, I think I'll bring another load. And you go back down, bring up another. It's a cycle that you have to just be aware of and anticipate.
And do you agree with that theory on urban driving?
Oh, yes.
You go as slow as you can.
Yeah. Now, when we say go as slow as you can, you've got to remember you're sharing the road with other road users, and nobody wants to be a mobile hazard for other people who are trying to get around and do their job of work. It's all about sort of lane discipline and knowing what you're doing. If you can anticipate how the traffic is flowing, but also if you know your journey on a given day and you allow additional time to be able to go easy, then that's good. If you're driving on a road which has more than one lane, you're obliged to drive on the left lane at all times anyway. So you shouldn't be in another lane unless you are overtaking.
We don't seem to know that.
No, we don't. We don't. And again, the limiters on trucks mean in real world driving on a motorway, they'll all be doing an indicated 100 kilometres there or thereabouts. But Turlock's point was absolutely perfect. Slot in, you know, near one, keep your distance so you can brake. But be aware that that then is a very efficient way of driving.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other road conditions, other factors outside of your car that can affect your use of fuel, Turlock?
Well, I mean, so one that you have no control over is actually which direction the wind is blowing. As a cyclist, if you have to cycle against the wind, it's a nightmare. And your car experiences the same thing. Of course, we're all very insulated in our car. You can just press the accelerator a little bit more, so you don't notice the amount of energy, the extra energy that you're using. So that's one you can't you can't
you do.
You can do nothing about that.
No, exactly.
There's rain again. If the road is wet, that will often that will cause a certain amount of loss of energy. Again, you'd notice as a cyclist because you're going down the road, it takes longer. It takes a bit more work to get down the road. You know when you hit puddles of water on the road that your car decelerates. You'll feel that.
Is there anything you can do if the road is wet to save fuel?
It's not really, no. Mm-hmm. What you can do it often if it's on a motorway or something like that and it has rained and it's drying off, and you'll see Formula One cars do this all the time, you can drive on the dry part of the road, because where most traffic goes, the road will tend to dry off faster there.
And that's just a simple case of friction. It's because the water is generating more friction with the tyre, it actually will be a strain to get through it. So if you can go onto a dry surface, you're better.
Exactly. Yeah. There's one other little point other than the weather. It's interesting, if everybody does slow down a little bit. Now, this is only if everybody slows down a little bit. Everybody will get to their destination faster. So people driving faster on the motorway tend to cause traffic jams. Yeah. Because everybody ends up bunching closer together, and that means everybody suddenly gets nervous, so they all brake and they all slow down, and it can easily happen. You see this frequently on a motorway where you're driving along and then you stop and you're sitting there and you don't know what's going on, and then after a while you pull off again and it's like, what was that all
Michael
about?
Michael Sheridan was probably in front.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's often called the, you know, concertina effect.
Yeah.
It's these phantom jams, and again, it's because people have really not being paying attention or taking pride in their driving and how they drive their vehicle. And that's something that we all need to do, is pay more attention to what we do in the car and make sure that it works as efficiently as we can, and that we're as generous to other road users as we are, as we'd be to ourselves.
Well, I think we're all in agreement, though, that it is really hard to go at 80 on a motorway with a speed limit of 120.
Yeah, but 100 is fine, and even 110 is better than 120. But remember, stay into the left lane, and the time savings, as Turlock says, you know, it really makes very, very little difference unless you're doing a really long journey.
Well, that was my point. None of us like going at 80, but actually we're not gaining that much by going up close to 120.
If you on your commute have a 10-kilometer stretch of motorway and you decide you're going to do it at 120 kilometers an hour, you'll do that in 5 minutes. If you do it at 100 kilometers an hour, you'll do it in 6 minutes. It's one minute loss.
The bonus for how you feel, you'll have much more thinking time. You'll be less stressed because you don't realize it at motorway speeds. There's a lot going on and things happen much sooner. So your reaction time is impacted the faster you go. Now, you know, I've driven an autobahn where you literally are looking 3-4 kilometres down the road as you're doing 280 kilometres an hour. So, you know, by being able to pull the speed back, you're giving yourself a more pleasant driving experience as well. So that's worth bearing in mind.
We just don't know it yet, maybe, you know, because we all say we'd find it hard to go slower.
It is hard to go slower. Everybody wants to go fast. I mean, there's a certain buzz in going fast. It kind of feels nice when you're overtaking other people because you feel like I am getting where I need to go. But that is a fantasy. I mean, and if it is the case that you are concerned about your fuel usage, then it is a very simple way of saving yourself quite an amount of fuel. Both if you've got long journeys on motorways, or if you tend to be stuck in start-stop traffic a lot. Both of these things are really easy to save very dramatic amounts of fuel.
Foot off the accelerator. Patience, everybody. Michael and Turlock, thank you both very much. The Gathering is next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.